Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It is Saturday, July 5th, 2014, the day after our nation's birthday with the Declaration of Independence from July 4th, and I'd actually like to start with something from that because it's highly relevant in the situation we find ourselves today. There's the famous story that after the founding of the drafting of the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Franklin was leaving Independence Hall, and he was asked by someone, "What kind of government did you give us?" And Franklin supposedly responded, "A republic, if you can keep it." That's a question as relevant today as it was in 1776, perhaps even more so, because in 1776 we had just concluded the debate which led to the decision to break from the British Empire. And as the Declaration of Independence spells out, the reason for breaking from the empire, the fundamental reason, was not taxes. It was tyranny. It was breaking from a monarchy which refused to allow the colony to act in its own interests. The question was sovereignty. Can a people organize themselves into a government that will defend the citizens over and above the power of other nations or special interests? That was what the American Revolution was about. And the nonsense you're getting from the Tea Party controllers and others, that it was all about taxes and big government, obviously none of them have read the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, because that was to establish a government precisely to defend the interests of the individuals against special interests. That is, the government was seen as the solution to the special interests. Now, one of the reasons that's so relevant today is that we're dealing with a situation in which we have a tyranny that's even greater than that of the British Empire in 1776. And that's the modern version of the British Empire, the interlocking corporate financial control centered in the British monarchy, the Privy Council, and the City of London and Wall Street, which is moving to eliminate any degree of national sovereignty for any nation, including our own. And we have a president of the United States who is an operative of that system, who's out to destroy not only our sovereignty, but every other nation's sovereignty. And I'm sure by the time we get to the end of this program today, where we're going to be dealing with a special case of an attack on the question of sovereignty, that you'll have a much better understanding of this, because you're going to need a better understanding, because the people listening to this call have to be those citizens who will defend the Republic, as Benjamin Franklin called you to this mission 238 years ago. It's a Republic if you can keep it. We're the guardians of that Republic. So I'm Harley Schlanger, I'll be your host today, and we're going to be joined in just a moment by two people who attended an event on Thursday, which was an emergency meeting of the Organization of American States dealing with precisely this question of sovereignty. Although not everyone involved in it fully understood the implications, certainly the American and the Canadian representatives did, and they were on the side of the empire of no sovereignty. So joining me on the program today will be Cynthia Rush, who's a longtime correspondent on Latin American affairs, excuse me, with the Executive Intelligence Review, and also Natalie Lovgren, who is presently deployed in Mr. LaRouche's basement team, the scientific team. But Natalie spent some time during 2012, almost half a year in Argentina, and both of them have been involved in the organizing to defend, not just defend Argentina, but to defend sovereignty, the sovereignty of nations. So Cynthia and Natalie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks, Harley.
Cynthia, let's just start by setting the scene for people, because the American press has been negligent in any coverage of this, from what I can tell. But what we're talking about is the situation with a more than a decade-old decision by the government of Argentina to reorganize its indebtedness. And the problems they had with that, largely due to two tiny hedge funds. They're not so tiny, but two hedge funds that were just a tiny percentage of the overall debt. So why don't you fill us in on what's the issue that comes up on this Argentine question in terms of the debt collection?
Well, just quickly as background, people may recall that Argentina defaulted on its debt in 2001, $85 billion, which was the largest default in history. And this followed more than two decades of just straight IMF monetarist usury imposed on the country and quadrupling of its debt through just usurious schemes. When it defaulted in 2001, that was followed very quickly by complete devastation of the country as a result of those 25 years of monetarist policy. And Argentina, which had always been one of the most developed countries on the continent with industrial and scientific development, plunged into the worst crisis in its history, with 57% of the population living in poverty, hunger, unemployment, destruction of the physical infrastructure, etc. So that in 2005, under President Néstor Kirchner, they restructured that debt in a way that really caused tremendous rage in the city of London and among the followers of the empire, because unlike many other countries, it carried it out from the standpoint of defending its own sovereignty without the IMF involvement, and stating very simply, we need to be able to grow, we need economic growth if we're going to pay our debts. Néstor Kirchner famously said, dead people cannot pay their debts. So this was really the premise of that restructuring, was their own sovereignty.
And their, Cynthia, just on that point, they had already defaulted, but Kirchner said, we will pay, but we're going to pay on terms that will allow the nation to survive.
Exactly. On our terms, on their terms. So that right there was a huge problem for the British Empire and the IMF and Wall Street. But they held their ground. They did this without the IMF, and they subsequently had no access to international markets. They restructured with about a 65 to 70% haircut, which the bondholders accepted. Then in 2010, that was 2005, 2010, they carried out a second restructuring so that ultimately you had 94% of all the bondholders joining in that restructuring on Argentina's terms. Except you had this then tiny group of what are appropriately called vulture funds, although it's probably an insult to vultures because they're far worse than that, which said, no, we're not joining the restructuring. They had bought up debt in 2008 this is one specific, the NML vulture fund, for $47 million, and then went to court and are suing and got a judgment for $832 million. They buy up the debt for pennies on the dollar, and then they sue for the full face value of the bonds.
Has anyone raised the question that, don't these hedge funds realize that they're taking risks when they go in and buy up debt that cheaply? I mean, whatever happened to their adherence to so-called free market principles?
Well, yes, actually, a number of people have pointed that out. However, these guys, and I can go into this later, are just, they prey on especially poor countries. They've gone after nations of Africa in particular, suing them, for millions and millions of dollars. Taking money that otherwise would go for health, education, AIDS, etc.
Let me just get those figures again, because that's worth noting. They bought up, you said, $46 million of the debt?
Yeah, the NML, which is run by this multi-billionaire Paul Singer, big funder of the Republican Party, among other things, $47 million. That was in 2008. They bought up defaulted bonds. And then they sued to get repaid. They didn't join the restructuring, the full face value of those bonds, and therefore were given a judgment to win $832 million.
Okay.
And that's just one case, right? Because there are others involved. But the point is, Argentina is saying, who are these minority groups? We have no reason to pay them. And you had a judgment in 2012 by a New York federal judge, Grisa, who actually ruled in favor of the vulture funds in November of that year, saying that Argentina had to, if they were going to pay the bondholders, they also had to pay the vulture funds. And the incredible absurdity of the situation is that the vulture funds are being recognized as legitimate creditors, which they're not. So Argentina has been fighting this situation since then, and these vulture funds have gone around the world looking for assets that they can seize, including here in Washington. They tried to seize some diplomatic buildings belonging to the Argentine government.
So they're using the judge's ruling to say they have a right to grab whatever assets, tangible assets, they can find.
Right. Now, subsequently, what happened was that an appeals court, even though it backed the lower court ruling in favor of the vultures, issued a stay on the execution of that ruling until such time as the Supreme Court would hear the case and decide whether or not the lower court ruling should remain in place. And however, in the meantime, that hasn't stopped the vultures from attempting to seize assets. They had already seized in October of 2012 the Argentine naval training ship, the Libertad, which was docked in Ghana, Africa. And any place else in the world that they can find assets or discovery. And one of the rulings when the Supreme Court just recently upheld or refused to comment on the lower court ruling, therefore keeping it in place, Judge Antonin Scalia said that the vulture funds have the right to engage in discovery to find where Argentina's assets are located in the United States or anywhere else, at the same time that he said basically the lower court ruling by Judge Grieza stands in place and that the vulture funds have to be paid $1.3 billion at the same time that those creditors who participated in the restructuring also have to be paid.
In
so,
full.
Yes. So,
well, Argentina didn't take this lying down.
No, they didn't. And since that time, they have really launched an international offensive seeking support, saying this is complete insanity. How is it possible for a tiny group, a minority group of scavengers to demand payment when we have carried out the terms of our restructuring religiously? We've followed the rules, we've made our payments, we've carried out reordering and restructuring of our debt and our finances for the last 10 years. And suddenly you have a New York judge ruling that our restructuring doesn't really stand any further. It can be overturned by this, you know, small group of murderers, really.
Well, let me just ask you, what right does a New York judge have to issue a ruling about a nation's sovereign debt payments?
Well, one of the terms of the restructuring, and this was true for many, many countries, is that they accepted the jurisdiction of the U.S. courts, and New York specifically, as the location, as it is for many other countries. The New York judicial system oversees the debt restructuring of Argentina. That was one of the terms of the restructuring, which you could say wasn't such a good idea, except I think that at the time, again, as many other countries have done, they thought this is what we can do right now, so they accepted it. So this is why you have a New York federal judge making these rulings. But the point is, Argentina launched this offensive. They have gained extraordinary support from international agencies, from practically every single regional agency within Iberoamerica, the Mercosur, the Union of South American Nations, the Community of Latin American Caribbean Nations, UN agencies, UNCTAD, the G77 plus China, Russia, just an, a really astounding array of support from, and that was the background and the context for their coming to the OAS for an emergency foreign ministers meeting to say, here's the issue. We want to pay our debt. We have this legal restructuring in place. We're being prevented from carrying out our legal responsibility by the ruling of this judge, with consequences that will have will be systemic in nature, affect the global financial system, have devastating effects on our country if we're forced into default, be subject to claims from other creditors who didn't participate in the restructuring for billions of dollars more, which we cannot possibly pay. And that this is an issue of sovereignty, and we're not going to back down on this issue, which is fundamental.
I'm assuming that some of the support they're getting is from nations that realize that if this can go through, that it could happen to them also.
Exactly, and that was the point that was made in the Thursday discussion. Practically every foreign minister or official who spoke said, this isn't just an Argentine case, we all face the same thing. And the other point that has been made by a number of, especially the president of Uruguay, who said right around just after the Supreme Court ruling, he said, look, this is not just Argentina, but he said, look, they're going to come after Argentina's assets. They're going to come after their oil. They're going to come after one of their major shale oil deposits in the country. And as Lyndon LaRouche pointed out, he said, this is the policy of bail-in, which is now in full force. This is the British Empire. And took off from there to say, this is now makes absolutely clear that we're facing a situation of global war and that Argentina cannot back down on this. The president of Uruguay said, now America, all American nations must mobilize. This can't just be an issue of Argentina alone against the vultures. This is all of America, and all of Ibero-America has to join in and come up with a strategy to help Argentina, because they're coming from Argentina today, but tomorrow they're going to come for us.
You're listening to Cynthia Rush on The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 5th, 2014. We're discussing the extremely significant developments over the last days related to the Argentine debt crisis and the drive to destroy the sovereignty of any nation. Now, I want to come back to the OAS meeting in a moment, but I'd like to bring in our other guest, Natalie Lovgren, who spent some time in Argentina. I know you haven't been there recently, but there's also been a long-standing internal effort to overthrow the government of Argentina coming from the outside. Natalie, do you know much about the response in Argentina to the fight that President Cristina Fernandez Kirchner is waging?
Well, I can say that what is going on now is clearly the continuation of a pattern of clear harassment by the British Empire to undermine the sovereignty of the nation. And when I was there in 2012, that was very clear amongst the population, and the spirit there was unified. People were unified that they were defending their nation against the British Empire. It was not to use the term British Empire, sometimes you get funny looks here as though you're speaking of something that is fictitious. There it is a complete obvious reality that the defense of the nation, the sovereignty and the existence and the progress of the nation is at stake. In 2012, there was this was leading up to the 30th anniversary of the Malvinas War, where Argentina went to war with England over the Malvinas Islands. And what was clear at that point, and what was detailed in a very clear presentation by the foreign minister, is that this is an issue of geopolitical control. It has nothing to do with the rights of the sheep farmers on these islands in the South Atlantic. This is a military base. If you look at the position of this in the South Atlantic, it's the last the last outpost that the British Empire needs to control that entire region. So you're looking at a connection between the entire Atlantic, the North Atlantic, going down into the South Atlantic, a passageway to the Indian Ocean and to the Pacific. And this was a fight over this entire territory. That was clear at the time. The other fight that was going on in the same vein was that Argentina decided to, as a pattern of re-nationalizing and taking back the resources of the country as part of the rebuilding of the country, Argentina decided to take back over majority control of the historic oil, the historic energy company, YPF. And this was the first state-run energy company in the world. It was founded in 1922. And during the 1990s, when the country was under attack by, under the administration of somebody who was interested in privatizing and selling off everything and opening up the country for looting to the IMF, to the World Bank, and to other international financiers, a lot of the national companies were privatized. So Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, the president, took back over majority control of this country, or of this company, YPF. And what was going on at the time, I mean, this company was a symbol for the speculation, the financial warfare that was going on at the time. There were incredible fuel shortages. People did not have enough gas. You would have to go to multiple gas stations to try to fill up your car, because the company Repsol, that was not even just a Spanish company, it was an international company, it was deliberately underproducing to be able to then rig the prices and speculate with it on the future market. So Argentina came under attack for doing this. Europe screamed, oh, they're being isolationist, they're being communist. There was a huge propaganda campaign against Argentina, but this was a very proud moment for the people. I was at the event outside the Congress. There were just crowds celebrating, and the congressman came out of the proceedings singing the national anthem. Now, what I see with the situation now is just a continuation of this pattern of harassment by the British Empire, because the system itself is at stake right now. The entire financial system is at stake, and Argentina cannot be allowed, from the perspective of the British Empire, Argentina cannot be allowed to defy them, to defy their terms for the system. They got out of the capital markets. So this dramatic recovery, remarkable recovery, going from the biggest default, biggest sovereign default in history in 2001, to then following an explicit Franklin Roosevelt New Deal model, which is what the Kirchners did, and developing the country, bringing back science and technology as the foundation, restarting the nuclear program in 2006, renationalizing these countries to protect the resources of the country. This is not acceptable to the British Empire. And so the case that you're seeing right now, and just as an example, these hedge funds, notably Paul Singer and NML Capital Management, these are instruments. These guys are agents of an imperial system that is harassing a sovereign nation right now. The assets that they're trying to seize, or they're starting a discovery process right now. One of the rulings was that that it was legal, although under U.S. law it's not legal to seize sovereign assets, it is legal to start a discovery process to find out all of the assets that are here. Now, abroad so far, this hedge fund has, Cynthia mentioned the Libertad, they also tried to seize a monument in France, the San Martin monument. They seized the satellite. Argentina has a satellite in cooperation with NASA, which was a very proud achievement for the Argentines to develop this technology with NASA and run this satellite. So these things are part of it's not about the money. It's about an attack on sovereignty. It's about making sure that Argentina is not allowed to get away with getting out of the terms of the game. The president calls it the financial bicycle. We got off of the financial bicycle. We got out of the game of borrowing more money to pay our debts and therefore being infinitely and always enslaved to the debt game. We got out of that game. And
let me just go back to Cynthia for a second, because I think it's important also to establish the position of the Obama administration, the impeachable President Obama. We had a letter issued last week by one of his leading national security advisors, Ben Rhodes, which supported the destruction of Argentina. Tell us about that, Cynthia.
Yes, well, he, of course, remember who Ben Rhodes is. He was the guy who prepped then National Security Advisor Susan Rice when she was going on the talk shows right after the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi to say that Al-Qaeda attack was really just in response to an anti-Muslim video. He basically said last week Argentina should pay, should make a deal with its creditors. And he said, really, there's nothing left to be done except to implement Judge Grias's ruling, i.e. pay the vultures. And Argentina has to be prepared to take the difficult steps that this might entail in order to once again become trustworthy in the eyes of the international community, especially because the private sector would like it to do this.
And what was the response of the U.S. as a member of the OAS meeting on Thursday?
Well, this was really quite remarkable in the sense that you had a total outpouring of support from Argentina. One foreign minister or government official after the other standing up, some very passionate, others more pro forma, but unanimous support, except for the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Roberta Jackson, who said, we would like to put a footnote on the resolution that was ultimately passed, saying that the United States cannot support this because this is a matter still being discussed in the U.S. judicial system. Of course, then stating, everyone knows the U.S. judiciary is independent. We are too concerned about the implications of this court ruling for sovereign debt restructurings, but unfortunately the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled, therefore there's nothing else that we can say. And then Canada, whose head of state is the Queen, jumped in to say, yes, this is being discussed in the U.S. courts, and we would like to disassociate ourselves from the final resolution which Brazil and Uruguay had crafted and which all the foreign ministers had agreed to, which was support for Argentina and backing its ability to continue with its sovereign debt restructuring without interference. So that was makes so dramatically clear why Obama has to be impeached and removed immediately, because here you have the entirety of the Ibero-American continent arrayed in support of Argentina, and the U.S. is hanging out there, clinging to this anti-sovereign, nation-wrecking policy of the British Empire. And historically, what should be the United States, what Lyndon LaRouche has repeatedly emphasized, we need a community of nations, equally sovereign nations, which must work together. The United States should be part of that, and of course we're not. And it was particularly important, Harley, to mention that one of the most crucial interventions in that discussion was made by the Transport and Public Works Minister of Guyana, Ropes and Ben, who raised the issue of Glass-Steagall. And he called on the representatives of the U.S. Congress to pursue efforts to put back into place the Glass-Steagall law. He gave a little bit of background on it, noting that Roosevelt had put this into place to set up firewalls between commercial and investment banks. And he made a crucial, crucial point. He said it's the moral responsibility of all stakeholders, including the American people and their government, to ensure that countries like Argentina will not have to adopt measures which threaten the progress that has been achieved. He's calling on the American people to stand up. And raising Glass-Steagall in that context, and of course, there were LaRouche PAC organizers out in front of the building also raising the issue of Glass-Steagall. We were able to speak with Argentine and other representatives also about what we're doing in the U.S. Congress to get put Glass-Steagall into place. And he makes the crucial point that if you had Glass-Steagall, the vulture funds would disappear. So that was an extraordinary, incredibly important intervention. And a very
I thought the other important intervention was from the Venezuelan foreign minister,
exactly,
who was, in a sense, paying back Argentina for its defense of Venezuelan sovereignty in 1902 in something called the Drago Doctrine. Why don't you just review that for people?
Yeah, this was that was also had a crucial impact. The Drago Doctrine was the foreign minister of Argentina in 1902, Luis Maria Drago, at the point where Teddy Roosevelt, British agent, had permitted British, German, and Italian gunboats to enter the Americas in violation of the Monroe Doctrine to collect Venezuela's debt, which they had defaulted on to foreign bondholders. And they bombed the port. They blockaded the port, the key Venezuelan port, to collect the debt. So Drago wrote a diplomatic note to the U.S. government saying, this is a violation of the Monroe Doctrine. And just one crucial quote, he said, compulsive and immediate collection by force could only result in the ruin of the weakest nations and their absorption by the powerful of the earth. And then he went on to quote Alexander Hamilton, saying that the contracts between a nation and particular individuals are enforceable according to the conscience of the sovereign and cannot be the object of compulsory force. That was Hamilton's quote. So the Venezuelan foreign minister read 9 paragraphs from that letter of Drago at the very beginning of his intervention. And said, and made the appropriate point. He said, in 1902, we had gunboats off of our shores, to collect the debt. Today, Argentina has the U.S. courts of New York and the U.S. Supreme Court, which are basically doing the same thing as the gunboats did.
Did this cause a reaction? Did people recognize, I mean, just in terms of the audience, of foreign ministers, you said some were passionate. Was it clear during the course of the meeting that there was a firm resolve there?
Well, yes, I think there was. I mean, no one stood up to applaud his particular statement. And he did also say, he said, let us set the pressing task of redesigning the international financial system, which was also, as a number of other people, speakers did address the fact that, you know, the financial system is collapsing. Unfortunately, no one has the proposal of the only proposal that would work, which is what, of course, Lyndon LaRouche has been calling for, which is to simply kick over the whole chessboard and go for the 4 points that he's proposing, starting with Glass-Steagall, that you cannot work within the existing financial system. And that's really one of the flaws in many of the way that the governments of the continent are thinking, including the Argentine government, that that somehow they think that there is a way that you can figure things out in the context of a global system that is falling apart. And that at the same time, obviously, you have this evil, it's an evil system, which is determined to wipe out the world's population, if not bring us to thermonuclear war. So there is no solution within the system. And that's why our intervention is so crucial.
Well, Natalie, I know when you were organizing in Argentina, this was a point that we were making while we were supporting the resistance. We were pushing to get this recognition that it is the whole system and it requires something more than just a local solution. What was the reaction we were getting on that? Because you say that the people generally are in support of the sovereignty of the nation. Do they understand the broader implications, or is that the same kind of fight we have here with Americans who accept the idea that we are sovereign and free and independent and don't realize that we've lost almost all of those protections?
I mean, I would say that that's a challenge for them and for everybody, but they were more clear on that issue than Americans, definitely. And I think the recognition has increased to today. I mean, what struck me in this OAS meeting was that it was understood, the premise of the meeting itself, that this was a systemic problem. This is a systemic problem, and it has systemic risks. And several people called for the need for an international mechanism to deal with this. And the answer is what Cynthia just went through with the Guyanese. That the only way that you can deal with this is with a Glass-Steagall approach. There's no reason for these type of speculative games to exist at all. One of the points that the finance minister made was this hedge fund, this vulture fund, is demanding a 1,608% return on an investment that was not even an investment. It was a act of praying. It was a vulture act. Argentina did not sit down and make a deal with this hedge fund that was going to invest in the country and then later receive a return. No, they sat in Wall Street and they looked at the country that was in the weakest position and then bought up bonds for pennies on the dollar and waited to figure out a weak point when they could then swoop down and make a return. So the point that the finance minister made was, what kind of system would you have a 1,600% return? I mean, if people could do that, if that was a normal thing, then nobody would work. You know, you would just make a killing off of...
Well, not even the mafia does that.
Yeah. Right, and that's apparently, you know, from what I've looked at with this hedge fund in particular, the 1,600% return is nothing. When they attacked the Congo during the civil war in the Congo, they were suing the Congo for a 4,000% return. And another story that the foreign minister brought up was this same hedge fund was known for buying an asbestos factory, which had gone bankrupt because the workers were dying of cancer, and then starting a propaganda campaign to make everybody believe that the workers were hypochondriacs, nothing was actually happening, asbestos is fine to breathe, and successfully denied the victims money that they would receive, got the company out of bankruptcy, and then turned around and sold the company for $1 billion profit. So this is just standard practice for Paul Singer and Associates. And I think it was completely clear during this meeting that that is not that type of situation should not be allowed to exist. And we need a new system.
Well, one of the things that we do know is that there is rejection of the transatlantic system by Eurasian nations, and it now appears that at least there's some sense of that within the Mercosur and the Ibero-American nations. Of course, we're seeing the dissolution of the transatlantic system. That's why there is this dramatic drive for bail-in, and that's also why there's a push for detonating wars, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Ukraine. Virtually worldwide, you have the disintegration of nations and the use of terrorism as a weapon. Now, one of the things that's coming up is in the middle of this month, a meeting of the BRICS nation, which will be in Brazil. Cynthia, is there any possibility that, I'm sure the Argentines have been invited to the meeting. Do you think anything can come out of this? What are you looking for with it?
Well, this is really interesting, and it's actually one reason why the imperial powers have a problem in ramming through what they're trying to do with Argentina, because you've got a flank here that, yes, Cristina Fernandez was invited to the BRICS meeting by Putin, the Russian president. Look at the powers that the BRICS represent, right? Russia, India, China, South Africa, and Brazil. And you have, at the same time, a number of deals that have already been discussed that are underway. The Chinese have been moving very aggressively in South America, somewhat in a certain way under the radar, but they've developed close relationships with regional organizations, with CELAC, which is the Community of Latin American and Caribbean Nations, a lot of economic deals. You've got enormous diplomatic activity that will take place at the BRICS summit among the presidents of those five nations and several Ibero-American leaders who are also going to be coming for a meeting after the formal proceedings. On July 15th is the meeting, and then the next day, the 16th, there are several meetings set up with leaders of UNASUR and MERCOSUR and CELAC. So you have Putin, who's going to visit Argentina on the 12th of July, next weekend, before the BRICS summit. You have the president of China, Xi Jinping, who's going to be visiting Argentina on the 19th. And has four state visits in the context of the BRICS meeting. So we know the BRICS is discussing setting up their own development bank, their own reserve fund. And of course, we have been emphasizing the extraordinary opportunity of the whole Eurasian flank as an alternative to the cadaver of the transatlantic system. The enormous number of economic and infrastructure and scientific deals that have been signed among these nations. And Argentina is increasingly looking to that as an alternative. There's some discussion that they're going to be trying to get $10 billion in loans from the BRICS countries. We'll see what happens. But that is absolutely a flank that offers an opportunity to Argentina. However, we have to emphasize that to the degree that the BRICS are trying to set up something also within the context of the existing system, that's not going to work. However positive it looks, that it has to go beyond that to move toward what Lyndon LaRouche is proposing. But this is something that we've also seen with the creation of the Eurasian Economic Union, of that coming into being. You have increasing number of countries talking about the possibility of strengthening trade and other cooperation between that bloc and the Mercosur, for example, the common market of the South. Increasing meetings between heads of state, some have gone to Kazakhstan and others. So that is a whole very, very positive flank that is opening up that has the empire very, very worried, because you can't force Argentina into a box to the degree that it has that opening to it, which offers other possibilities. If I could just mention something that
sure, go ahead.
That Natalie brought up earlier that I think is really important to understand on Argentina, which is the whole issue of science and its scientific achievement, which is really, as she said, this is one of the reasons why Argentina is such an object of hatred, because it has a very long tradition of scientific and technological development, which goes back really even to the 19th century. An intersection of American system policies with the scientific tradition of Alexander von Humboldt and a whole entry of German scientists who came to Argentina in the latter part of the 19th century, who made a major contribution to their scientific infrastructure and development. And then, of course, in the 20th century, you had the development of nuclear energy. Argentina had its own rocketry industry, its own automobile industry, and it had an achievement in science, in all areas of science, which really no other country on the continent had, certainly at that level. And when the nuclear program was, they tried to dismantle it during the period of the military dictatorship in the 70s and 80s, and then in the 90s. And that was brought back to life by Néstor Kirchner, as Natalie said, in 2006. And today Argentina is going full steam ahead with nuclear energy, right? They just completed their third plant, which just went into operation. They've got plans to build a fourth and a fifth nuclear plant, probably with Russian and Chinese involvement. So this is a scientific tradition that is absolute anathema to the British Empire. And again, the U.S., which in the 1950s had, through the Atoms for Peace program, had excellent cooperation with Argentina through, that Eisenhower promoted, is being left out in the cold on nuclear energy and other scientific cooperation, not only with Argentina, but with the rest of the continent.
Well, let me ask a question that maybe, Natalie, you know the answer to. We're doing a lot of mobilizing in the Congress now around the importance of impeaching Obama to save the country, but then also going ahead with the four basic law proposal of Lyndon LaRouche, which includes Glass-Steagall as the first. When we meet with congressional offices, do we have any sense that there's an awareness of what just happened in Washington on Thursday with his OAS meeting, that there's an issue with Argentina, the question of sovereignty and the debt? Do we get anything from the Congress on that?
I can't answer that. I haven't been in meetings since this issue came up. So.
Well, maybe Cynthia, you know, I mean, is there some awareness in the United States of what's happening around Argentina and the debt?
Yes, well, there are a couple of interesting developments. We discovered, I think, fairly recently that in 2009, there was a bill that was proposed by John Conyers, Maxine Waters, and Baucus. I can't remember his first name.
Max
Baucus, right. Which was a proposal to prohibit, to make illegal, vulture funds. It didn't pass, obviously, but that was a very clear intervention and awareness. There is awareness among, I'd say, the Black Caucus and the Hispanic Caucus, the Progressive Caucus, and there was a delegation of Argentine congressmen that came up here recently, a few weeks ago, to meet with congressmen, and they did actually get, at least in some cases, in a few cases, they got actually a very decent response and understanding. And we know from, we have spoken with people on Capitol Hill about the Argentine case, and we have gotten a serious response from, three or four congressional offices who do understand the implications of this and are very concerned about it. Obviously we have to keep up the pressure.
Well, I think that's a good point to just reiterate the mobilization that we're undertaking. There are about four more weeks left of the congressional session before these guys go into their election mode. And they're going to be in session beginning in the middle of this coming week. And we need visits to offices, we need letters, but more importantly, phone calls, any pressure from the population. We have not yet reached the level of mobilization that we had, for example, nationally during the last summer when the president was threatening to go and launch attacks into Syria. We need much more pressure on the Congress because the Congress is in a never-never world where they're accepting the idea that you can destroy the sovereignty of nations. You know, the whole discussion about the $500 million increased aid to the rebels in Syria, here you have ISIS, this jihadist force that's overrunning whole sections of Iraq and parts of Syria, threatening Lebanon, Jordan, and other countries. And instead of supporting the Assad regime, which is the only government, that is the Syrian government, that's fighting against these terrorists, the U.S. is committed to not only overthrowing Assad and funding the terrorists to do it, but getting rid of the Maliki government in Iraq. And then, of course, this letter from Ben Rhodes in support of the Vulture funds just shows to what extent this regime needs to be changed in the United States, and we need to do it through impeachment. So I think this report you've given us makes very clear the issue between sovereignty and economic development, scientific advance, all of which is part of the LaRouche Four basic laws, versus a totally chaotic free trade deregulated world which is collapsing and which is leading to war. We have a little less than, we have about 8 minutes to go, and I'd like some final thoughts from both of you. Let's just start with Natalie on the how Americans should be thinking about this situation in Argentina.
Well, from the spirit of the patriotism that I saw amongst Argentines, I think that if Americans had developed that spirit, which we have a history that warrants that deserves a pride about the development of our republic, and if people were to take an example of the way that the Argentines are fighting and the recognition that sovereignty needs to be preserved, I think that, going back to what you mentioned in the beginning of the show, I think if Americans adopted that spirit, adopted that defense of the nation, adopted the patriotism, I think we would keep our republic and we would keep this entire system from collapsing.
And Cynthia, what would you add to that?
Well, actually along the same lines, you know, if you think of this with these bloodsuckers, Paul Singer, NML, this is un-American, right? This is in complete violation and contradiction to our Republican tradition to allow these guys to run amok. And in that spirit, the support of Glass-Steagall, congressman moving, pummeling your congressman, to understand that fact, and that we have Ibero-Americans reminding us of the Drago Doctrine and the intervention into internal affairs of the United States when we had a British agent for president, as we do today, to remind the United States of its historical responsibility as a republic. Americans should be reminding their legislators of our republic is in jeopardy from these same British forces, and it's now time to act to get rid of this agent president that we have, who is making it impossible for us to have the kinds of cooperative relationships with the rest of the hemisphere that, you know, was in the tradition of Franklin Roosevelt, and that all of our leaders, you know, historically, like John Quincy Adams.
And Cynthia, what will we have coming up in the EIR on coverage of this? That, by the way, for those of you who are not subscribers, you should be, because the Executive Intelligence Review is the magazine of record. We're the only place you're going to find this, the story that you've just heard for this last 55 minutes on what the fight is from the standpoint of the American system. So what kind of coverage are we going to have in the EIR?
I suspect that we'll cover this whole debate at the OAS coming up this coming week. And obviously we have the BRICS summit coming up the following weekend, and all of these diplomatic efforts as well. So, but we should look for coverage of the OAS meeting and all of our intervention into that.
And this is the kind of thing that our supporters should get and read, and then make copies and get to the congressional offices so that they actually know what's going on. But let me just finish, because we have just a couple minutes left. Cynthia, you've been watching this fight for years. You've watched capitulation after capitulation, Lyndon LaRouche's intervention with the debt bomb in 1982 and Operation Juarez, defense of Argentina during the Malvinas. We've also seen in Europe, country after country, you had similar kinds of stories with Argentina, that is, indebtedness built up by sovereign debt bonds that were underwritten by Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and others, where the countries in Europe have capitulated and they're killing their populations. I would presume that what you're seeing now in Argentina does give you a glimpse of the potential, and also some hope for being, not that Argentina is going to win the war by themselves, but that people will fight.
Well, yes, absolutely, people will fight. But I think they also need to be given the tools to help them understand that the fight can be won to the degree that the policies that, for example, LaRouche is proposing, that they fight to have those policies implemented, which, of course, as you said, the Europeans certainly aren't doing. And, you know, we had proposed that Argentina ally with those nations of Europe that are under attack by the Troika to together work to overturn this the transatlantic system. And I should mention also that the Pope's intervention in this is extremely important. He's, of course, Argentine. And his sentiments and his statements are being used by other leaders, you know, denouncing financial speculation. Human beings, you know, and the common good must be the absolute top priority of all policies. And his intervention should not be underestimated.
Okay, well, we're coming to an end. I'd like to thank our guests, Cynthia Rush and Natalie Lovegren. And I want to encourage our listeners to get your friends to listen to this interview. You know, most Americans have this conceit that they know a lot about the world because they watch Fox or they watch CNN or they look at this cartoon called USA Today. But as you know, most of your friends don't know anything about the world. And here we are, we're seeing epic struggles, world historic developments that you're involved in or could be involved in. And for us to win this fight, we need the leadership of handfuls of people who will show courage to fight against this imperial force. And so if we have gained anything from listening to this program, it's that the spirit of the American Revolution is still alive. The defense of national sovereignty is still a principle which is absolutely essential for mankind to get out of our crisis without getting incinerated in nuclear war. So again, I'd like to thank the two of you for joining us. We'll be back next Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, with the next edition of The LaRouche Show.
Thank you.